So as I said, we're on Vavon Bet, about just above halfway down. Lashalim Tashlume Nezek, and we're no longer going to be talking about the chiyuv, right? The obligations per se, but the payment, right? Lashalim Tashlume Nezek. What exactly does a person have to pay back? So we're not going to do the, well, you'll see in a moment. We're not going to talk about, I'm not going to get into to calculating it, but in terms of how the payment is made. So the Mishnah had said the following. Right at the end of the Mishnah said that the last few words, Chov HaMazik Lashalim Tashlume Nezek, that the person who has caused the damage, or the person whose property, whose animal, etc., has caused the damage, is required to pay back Tashlume Nezek some sort of reparations. B'meitav Ha'oretz. And this phrase is really the jump-off point for the continuation of this Gemara. Now, what does it mean when it says B'meitav Ha'oret? Sounds like the best type of land, really, is how we would translate the Meitav Ha'oret. But what exactly does that mean? So, if everyone's with me, is that we're just above halfway down, and this is sort of two dots in the middle of the line. Rashalim Tashlume Nezek. Tanu Rabbanu. The rabbis taught Meitav Sodehu. Umeitav karmo yishalim. So when it says meitav ha'oretz, what does it mean? It means meitav sadehu, umeitav karmo yishalim. Okay, the best of his land, or the best of his field, the best of his vineyard. Meitav sadehu shall nizak, umeitav karmo shall nizak, divrei Rabbi Yishmael. So the opinion of Rabbi Yishmael is this is referring, when it says his land, it's referring to the nizak. The nizak, these are crucial expressions, very, very similar in Hebrew, easy to get confused, but very important not to get them confused. Nizak is the person who the damage has happened to, the damagee, you might say, whereas mazik, we'll see in a moment, is the person who has caused the damage, i.e. the person who is making the payment. So the opinion of Rabbi Yishmael is that that we're talking about, when we're talking about paying back with land, we're talking about based on the best land of, and again, we'll have to explain what that means, but based on the best land of the nizak, i.e. the person who has had the damage caused to them. Rabbi Akiva, Omer, Rabbi Akiva's of the opinion, lo ba hakosuv ela ligvos lenizokin min ha'idis, right? He says, no, he says that when the Torah uses the phrase Meitav Sodehu Meitav Karmo Yishalem, right? That is a direct quote from Parashas Mishpatim, chapter 22, verse 4 in the book of Shmos, which obviously will be the weekly parasha in a couple of weeks. And so when the Torah says that, Lo bo hakasuv ela ligvos lenizokin min ha'idis, what that means is that it's trying to get the best possible land, V'kal v'chomer lehekdesh, and all the more so when it comes to hekdesh. So we're going to have a few little tangents as we go through this. But seemingly of the opinion, that Rabbi Kiva's opinion at the moment is that we're talking about the mazik, talking about the land of the mazik, whereas the opinion of Rabbi Yishmael is that we're talking about the land of the nizak. And we'll come back to this kal v'chomer lehekdesh in just a moment. V'Rabbi Yishmael, what about Rabbi Yishmael? Ochal shemena mishalem shemena. Ochal kechusha mishalem shemena. Is that what he's saying? So it sounds like if we're following the opinion of Rabbi Yishmael, right? He's saying you have to from the best possible land of the nizak, right? Surely you'd say it depends on what was eaten, right? What exactly was eaten? Well, this is at least the way the Gemara is understanding it at the moment. So the way the Gemara is understanding it at the moment, it sounds like the opinion of Rabbi Yishmael is that if you eat, let's say, ochal shemena mashalim shemena, let's say the animal comes along and eats from the best possible land, right, from the best possible fruits, then I understand, mashalim shemena, you have to pay back from the best possible fruits. Ochal kechusha mashalim shemena, right, but when he eats from the worst possible land, let's say my animal comes along and eats your sort of the scraps on the side, mashalim shemena, why should you be paying back from the best possible land, right? Why exactly is that the requirement? Meitav sadeh shel nizak or meitav karma shel nizak? Why are we saying that this has to come from the best possible land of the person who has been damaged? Surely it should depend where the food came from, right? Where the damage actually occurred. So that's our, as I said, that's our understanding at the moment. We'll fine tune that as we go along. But in the current perception of the Gemara, Rav Idibar Avin, Omer Rav Idibar Avin, and I think this is the sort of Gemara that might make sense to go through a couple of times. But for now, we'll try and get a good chunk of it, and then we'll pause for questions. Omer Rav Idibar Avin. So Rav Idibar Avin suggests the following: Hacha b'mayaskinan. What are we talking about? Kagon she'ochal arugo bein ha'arugos. Right? You have a whole big field, and the animal comes along and eats. My animal comes along and eats something, right? She'ochal arugo bein ha'arugos. One of them, right? We're not sure exactly where it came from. V'lo yodinan I kechusha ochal I shmeina. We're not sure whether it's from the better ones or from the worse ones. I kechusha ochal I shmeina ochal. Dimshalim shmeina. And therefore we conclude that you have to pay back from the best. So i.e. that, let's see if Rashi clarifies over here. So that's really left off as a... Yeah, okay, so that's the... So that's the suggestion of Idibar Avin. Let's just ask a question. Let's just continue with the Gemara's question and then we'll pause for a moment, because the Gemara has a response to this. So we said, ochal ishmein ochal dimshal. Sorry, v'lo yodinon ika chusha ochal ishmein ochal dimshalim shmeina. Omar Rava. So we're now up to Omar Rava. Omar Rava is more or less halfway down. Everyone with me? Omar Rava is the third to last word on the line, almost bang in the middle of the page. Omar Rava, and we'll stop after this to just pause for thought. Uma ilu yodinon, he says, if we would have known de kechusha ochel, right? Let's say you would have known that the animal ate the worst type of land, then lo mishalem ela kechusha, right? Then you would have only been required to pay the from that low level, fruit, that low level land. Hashtod de lo yodinon, but now in a case that we do know, I kechusha ochel, I shmeina ochel, mishalem shmeina. Right? Why should that be? Why should now? Because you're not sure. Surely being not sure is worse in a sense. Being not sure should make it a lower level. Why? Hamotzi mechavera olavarai is a very important principle here. Not just here, across the whole of Shas, we find this principle in all sorts of places. Of hamotzi mechavera olavarai. If I am making a claim against somebody else, I'm the one, the burden of proof is upon me, right? It's upon the person who's making the claim. So I am now the nizak, I'm the one who has had the damage caused. I'm coming to Beis Din and I'm saying this person's animal has damaged my property, right? And has eaten, let's say, some of my fruits. I want to extract money. The burden of proof is upon me to say that it was from the best. It should be. This is Rava's question. It should be upon me to provide the proof that you've eaten from the best possible land, right? If I would come along and say that he ate from the worst land, then the Beis Din would make him pay back from the worst land. Now that I'm not sure, all the more so I should be getting back from the worst land because I've provided no proof otherwise, in a sense, right? I should end up with that. So even though that really is sort of the middle of a question, I think it's a good place maybe to just pause and clarify a few points. So let's say from the Rashis, and then we'll take a question if anybody has. But otherwise, there's probably a better place to stop in a little bit. So just to look at some of the Rashis. So Rashi says here. Okay, yeah. So on the point we just made, Ochal Kechusha, right? Where we just said Ochal Kechusha, Mi Meshalem Shmeina. Why should you be paying? Again, this is the point we were just making. Mi Meshalem Shmeina. Why should you be paying from the best land? Bitmiya. Bitmiya is a great phrase that appears in the Rishonim. Bitmiya is like a sort of a language of surprise. You know, you're stunned. The Gemara is asking a rhetorical question. Why should that be the case? All the more so, you should be paying from the lower level rather than from the higher level. Now, if we take just a step back to Meitav Sadehu Shel Nizak, so a little bit higher up, Rashi clarifies a little bit what exactly we're referring to. She'im ochla aruga besadehu. So in my Rashi, this is more or less parallel with the fourth line down of the Gemara. So it's just along with the fourth line down of the Gemara. Meitav sadehu shel nizak. She'im ochla aruga besadehu. Let's say that this animal came along and ate a row of bushes. Shemin aruga meshubachas shel nizak. He ate from a particularly good, juicy set of these bushes, of these fruits. Kama yofe achshav im peiroseh. So how are we calculating? According to this understanding of the Gemara is saying that we're basically calculating the amount that is due based on the quality of the fruit, and we are going to make that judgment based on the highest possible quality. So in a sense, at this point in the Gemara, what we seem to be understanding is that according to Rabbi Akiva's opinion, right, who says that you have to take from the very, very best, that what you're doing is that if the animal comes along and eats, let's say, from one bush, let's say one bush, and one bush has, for example, 10 apples, right? For example, a small apple tree, okay, not a bush, but let's say a tree, or let's say strawberries, for they tend to grow on bushes. So let's say it contains 10 strawberries. Shemin aruga meshubachas shel nizak. Sorry, shomin aruga meshubachas shel nizak. So you take the best sort of types that this nizak, that the person who has been damaged has. Kama yofe achshav im peiroseh, what are they worth with the fruits on them? V'kamata yofe below peiros, how much are they worth without the fruits on them? V'nosein lo, and that is the amount that is given. So you take, as I said, you make a judgment based on the best possible thing that they have, and you judge what is it worth before the damage was done, what would it be worth after the damage is done, x minus y or y minus x, and that's the amount that has to be paid back. And again, this seems to be regardless of what has been eaten, which is why the Gemara is so surprised at that, right? Why should that be regardless of what the person has, regardless of what the animal has eaten? Sorry, not regardless of what the animal's eaten. The Gemara seems to assume that if you know that it comes from the worst, then you would go with the worst, at least at this point. But we've sort of ended up in this situation of what we call suffix, right? Where we're not sure what the animal ate from. And in that case, at the moment, that's where we're trying to plug in the opinion of Rabbi Akiva. So we're plugging in Rabbi Akiva in a case of doubt, in a case where we're not sure what the animal ate, and we're saying that is the case that Rabbi Akiva is referring to. If the animal ate the best stuff, you would pay from the best stuff, or you would judge based on the best stuff. If the animal ate from the worst stuff, then you would make the assessment based on the worst stuff. In the case of doubt, then you make then you sort of go upwards, and you make the assessment based on the best. And that's, as I said, that's where we've left off with this question of why that should be the case. It sounds a bit strange for that to be the case, because it seems to contradict a general principle in the Gemara of Hamotzi Mechaver Alav Araya, i.e. one who is coming to make a claim is the one who should be bringing the burden of proof. And therefore, in a case of doubt, we should go downwards rather than upwards. We should go to the worst, to the sort of worst part of the field rather than the best part of the field. And just to clarify one more point before I pause for questions, is that we're all talking about within what's in front of us, right? Within the field of the nizak, within what has been the person who has had the damage caused to them, within what they own and within what they have. Okay, so that's where we're at the moment. Any questions before we go? Before we get into even more complicated. All right, everyone with me at this stage of the Gemara? Okay, let's. I think maybe we'll conclude this part, and maybe we'll.
Rabbi.
Yes.
Sorry, I may have misheard you, but did you say that if the claimant, in this case, doesn't have to prove that it was eaten from the best? Is it the assumption, if you're not sure, that it is taken as the best?
I misunderstand what you're saying. Less of an assumption, and it's what the Gemara is puzzled by. The Gemara has left that in and of itself as a question, but yes, at this stage of the Gemara, it sounds like the opinion of Rabbi Akiva is that in a case of doubt, where we're not sure, we would, in a sense, expect the mazik to pay from the best. We would expect the damager to pay based on the best possible, the most amount, effectively, the largest amount. And that's challenging, right? So the Gemara's, we really left off mid-question, but I thought there was a lot of information, so I thought it was worth taking just pausing. So that's really the question that we've left off with, and that is more or less in the middle of the Amud. Omar Rav Bar Avin, Hochem Mayaskinon, that's there. So Ela Omar Rav Acha Bar Yaakov. So that is in my Gemara. It's trying to find a good pointer. If you sort of follow the, there's a Tosfos on the right, Kagon. So if you follow that into the middle, it's about four lines below that, three lines below that, in the middle of the line. Ela Omar Rav Acha Bar Yaakov. So Ela Omar Rav Acha Bar Yaakov. Now this is introducing a new way of seeing Rabbi Akiva's opinion. And when we've right now, I think what's key is to try and soak up what the flow of the Gemara. When we've got through all of this, I think maybe it may make sense to sort of break it down and go through the different stages of the Gemara and figure out what is the Gemara's, what is the understanding at each stage. But until we've sort of really got through to a solid conclusion, I think it might get too confusing. So at the moment, it's good to keep the flow. Ela Omar of Achabar Yaakov. So Rav Acha Bar Yaakov offers a different approach to the opinion of Rabbi Akiva, namely that the verse is talking about ligvos lenizakin min ha'idis, that you have to always take from the best. So what does he say? Hachaba mayaskinon, what is this referring to? Kagon shehoisa idis de nizak, kaziboris de mazik. So he says, for instance, you have as follows. You have now, we're not talking about the amount that has to be paid back, but we're talking about when a person comes to pay back, you can use land to pay back, right? You can use land to pay back. And if you're using land to pay back, what type of land do you have to pay back? So now, for argument's sake, we're talking about, let's say, £1 million, right? You have to pay back £1 million. Now you can pay that back in property if you want. You can pay back £1 million in property. Now at the end of the day, it's going to total the same amount. It's going to total £1 million. But without wishing to offend anyone, let's say there's a difference between, for instance, £1 million that's made up of, 10 houses in Liverpool, right? Versus a flat that overlooks the Thames, or for example, right? So the difference between the two, yes, correct. But the sort of the amount may be the same at the end, but there's a difference between the two. And so here the Gemara says that, let's say you have the following scenario. We're really talking about much, much smaller amounts here. But let's say you have the following scenario. Kagon shahoisa idis de nizak ka ziboris de mazik. So the best possible idis is the best and ziboris is the worst, right? So it means like a sort of, so you have multiple pieces of land, patches of land. And the idis, I have an idis land. I have a land as the person who has been damaged. I have a land of a certain level. And that for me is my best land. I have a few different fields, and my best field is really of the same quality as Kaziburis Damazik, as the worst land of the person who has caused the damage, right? So they owe me money. They're going to have to pay back, call it £1 million, whatever the amount is, right? They're going to have to pay it back. Now, the quality of my best field is equal to the quality of their worst field. Over Har Pligi Rabbi Shmuel. This is the point on which they are disagreeing. Over Har Pligi, and this is what they're disagreeing about. Rabbi Shmuel Sover, the opinion of Rabbi Shmuel is Bidinizak Shaiminon. That we have to base this on the land of the Nizak, and therefore the best quality land of the Nizak is a certain level. Happens to be that that's the worst quality land of the Mazik, but that's fine. That is the basis on which they have to pay, and therefore, if they're choosing to pay with land, then they will pay back with their worst land, even though it's their worst land. But it matches up with the best land of the Nizak, and therefore, that is fine. That's what would be expected. Rabbi Kiva Sover, Rabbi Kiva disagrees. Bidamazik Shaiminon. He's of the opinion that you base this idea of paying back from the Meitav Haaretz, right? This is all based on the fact that the Torah uses the phrase Meitav Sadehu, Meitav Karma, from the best possible land, from the best field, from the best vineyard. So whose best is it? Rabbi Shmuel says it's the best of the person who's been damaged. Rabbi Kiva says, no, it's the best of the person who has caused the damage. B'demazik Shaiminon, and therefore, even though my land, as the person who was, I feel like I keep changing who I am, whether I'm the person who's caused the damage or received the damage, but the person who has caused the damage, right, their land, even though they have much, much better land than the person who has had the damage caused to them, they still have to pay from their best land, according to Rabbi Kiva, whereas according to Rabbi Shmuel, they only pay based on the best land of the nizak, of the person who has had the damage done to them.
If a damager has land which can raise assets, monetary assets, can the person who was damaged ask for the monetary equivalent? Then how it's raised?
Inferior. When you say to ask for money instead of the land.
Yeah. So in other words, the damager has assets quite clearly. So if he realizes he liquidates those, he can actually settle for the cash damages that are due.
Sorry, who prefers?
The person whose land's damaged, rather than receiving land,
yes,
the settlement, the damager clearly has a physical asset which he can realize.
Oh, I see. Right. So you mean to sell off the land and pay in money?
Yeah, exactly. And then you do away with the problem.
I'm not going to. Well, yes and no, because everything has value. Okay, let's assume for now that the answer is no. I'm not expert enough to know. There are a number of Gemaras that talk about how you have to pay back. So I think we'll have to figure that out as we go forward. But seems clear from here that the answer is no, that this seems to be a legitimate way to pay back, that paying back with land is legitimate. I'm not sure if that's only in a case where you don't have. Sorry, let me take a step back. Your question is, let's say they don't have any, they only have assets to pay with. Should they not be required to change those assets into money first? That seems clear that the answer is no, right? That you have to pay back from the land. I thought you were, in my mind, I was getting confused whether you were asking of if they have land and they have money, whether they are allowed to pay back with land as opposed to money. I believe that the answer may be no, but I didn't want to comment on that. So I'll pretend I didn't say that, and we'll come back to that. But it seems clear from here that no, it's perfectly legitimate to pay with land. The question is, what type of land is one required to pay with?
Rabbi, can I just ask a question?
Yes.
Okay, so does it not just boil down to, irrespective of whether in the eye of the beholder, someone's land is better than another person's land, it is value? And therefore, it comes down to compensating with an equivalent value. So is there an arbitrator or an independent expert in terms of who decides whether, you know, we talked about Liverpool, we talked about London. So whether you have 100 acres in Liverpool and 1 acre in London, it's down to value, is it not?
Well, no, it's not. No, so that's the point. Let's say you have. We're talking about at a stage where you have the independent arbitration and you have the value, and in a sense the values have been returned as equal. But even though the values are still equal, one may still be slightly more desirable than the other. I was choosing a quick example, whether that's the case or not. But yeah, one will be more desirable than the other, even though the value is the same.
So how do you quantify desirability?
What a person wants to have more. So again, to take our example, let's say I were to separate to damages. Let's say someone were to offer you a present, and they were to offer you very generous individual. They were to offer you 10 properties in a certain location, or the or one property of the equivalent value in a different location. So you may decide that one is more. You prefer one over the other. There will always be, even though they carry the same value, and yes, the location factors into the value of the property, right? But at the end of the day, there is still going to be a bottom line monetary value to these things, but still a desirability to one over the other. Okay. Yes, Phil.
Rabbi, isn't the answer to Alan to say the whole point of this part of the Gemara is we're trying to understand what the phrase b'meitav ha'aretz means from the best of the land in the original Mishnah? So we're exploring all the possible meanings of that. So in other words, you're trying to jump to the end and say, well, you know, don't be a point an arbitrator, whereas we're still rehearsing all the possible meanings that b'meitav ha'aretz could mean. So we're not sort of there yet, really.
No, but in this understanding of meitav ha'aretz, we're talking about a case where the values are in, and the point is that you're paying back based on one being more desirable as opposed to one being less desirable. That is the
but we're looking at it because here. Isn't the scenario that you don't have the ready cash to pay, so you've only got land to pay back with?
Right.
So what does b'meitav ha'aretz mean in that context? It's really quite nuanced, I think.
It's very nuanced, but meitav correct.
Yeah,
correct. Meitav ha'aretz means in a case where you are paying back with land, you have to pay back from the best land. What exactly does the best land mean? So in this understanding of the Torah, it means best land of the person who has, it's even, as you say, even more nuanced than that. In a case where the best land of the nizak, of the person who's been damaged, matches up with the best the worst land of the mazik, the person who's caused damage, and in that particular case, then it's in a sense acceptable for the mazik, for the person who's caused damage, to pay back from their worst land, even though they do have better land available. We don't require, according to the opinion of Rabbi Kiva, they have to pay back from their best land, whereas according to the opinion of Rabbi Ishmael, they can pay back from their worst land because that is of equivalent value to the land of, to the best land of the nizak. Now maybe when we finish the Gemara, we can come back and throw in, there are lots, we've said this is very nuanced, but actually there are a whole load of subtly different scenarios that we could throw into this as well. So for instance, Tosfos, I think, over here, Tosfos talks about the Gemara later on. Okay, you know what, I'll hold off onto that, sorry, because the Gemara goes on to a slightly nuanced case, and one of the other nuanced cases is, let's say it's not talking about best versus worst, let's say it's talking about middle, right? Let's say, or you know, somewhere that's not exactly, let's say it's not exactly matching up perfectly. So let's continue in the Gemara, unless you have any other questions on this point, and then we'll sort of throw in the other similar scenarios a little later on. Okay, so as we pointed out, we're now talking about this very, very specific case. But before we go on to challenge this, let's just go into the reasoning. So the Gemara now continues with my timer. That's an abbreviation in my Gemara, Memtes. And it is, I would say, about 20 lines from the end of the page, towards the end of the line. My timer, de Rebbe Yishmael. So de Rebbe is the second last word, is the last word on the line. And the phrase before that is my timer. 1, 2, 3, 4. Yeah, it's about 15, 20 lines up from the bottom of the Gemara. My timer, de Rebbe Yishmael. What is the reasoning for Rebbe Yishmael? Ne'mar sode lamata, v'ne'mar sode lamala. Right? So he says, it says sode twice in this verse. It actually says more than that, I think. But so in the verse that we mentioned earlier from Parashas Mishpatim, chapter 22, verse 4, the Torah says the word sadeh twice. Well, I'll come back to it in a moment. Ma sadeh ha'omer lamala denizak. It's clear that the first time it mentions the word sadeh, it's referring to the person who has been damaged. Af sadeh ha'omer lamata denizak. So he says so too when it says the word sadeh later on. It's referring to the same field, or not the exact same field, but it's referring to the field of the nizak, of the person who has been damaged. So what does the verse say? Ki yav ish sode o kerem veshilach es beiro uvie bisde acher. So we spent a long time on sort of daf gimel around basically figuring out what these different words mean and coming up with the four categories of nazik, or seven categories really, based on these different verses. But the point is, we're talking about a case where something has been damaged. Ki yav ish sode o kerem, right? So this is talking about Karen, Shane, Regel, Vashilach is Beiro, Uvier Bisde Acher. The damage has been caused in a certain field. Then the Torah continues, Meitav Sodehu, who Meitav Karmo Yishalem. Then he pays back from the best field or the best vineyard, right? Sodehu, Meitav Karmo Yishalem. You have to pay back from the best field, from the best vineyard. And therefore, he uses the word sodehu at the end of the verse, sodeh. Uses the word kiyav ish sodeh o kerem, v'shilach hisbiru uvir bisdei acher, right? Clearly, the first ones are talking about the field where the damage has taken place, i.e. fields that belong to the damagee. And therefore, the end of the verse, which is talking about the payment coming from the fields, must also be referring to the sodeh, the nizak, and therefore is limited by the fields that are owned by the person who has been damaged. For Rabbi Kiva, has, as we said, has a different opinion. What's his reasoning? Meitav sodehu umeitav karmo yishale. Right? He says the verse attributes. It says you pay back from the best of his field and from the best of his vineyard. Dehaich dekam yishale. Right? I.e., there's a possessive article on this sodeh, on this field. Dehaich dekam yishale. The person who is doing the payment is the person who the fields belong to, and therefore it must mean his best fields, his best vineyards. The person who is paying, that is the level that we are looking at, right? So it comes from his best fields rather than from the person who has had the damage caused to it. Okay.
I still fail to understand that whether he pays from the damager pays from the best of his fields or the worst, if provided he compensates the damage caused exactly, what difference does it make? Why are we so concerned about this?
We're so concerned. We're concerned with every nuance, but we're concerned with this nuance. The Torah seems to have a stipulation that one is required, and and so, as I said, so this is the subject of the debate between Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva.
But still, the concept of the compensatory damage is that the damage is paid, compensate. You know, whether it comes from one source or another.
It is important whether it comes from one source or another. I think that's.
But what we're trying to do is we're trying to compensate the person who has suffered damage to the same level that he'd be in had he not suffered the damage.
Right.
I mean, surely that's the point. At the end of the day, that's what we're trying to achieve.
I think the Gemara doesn't say this explicitly, but the compensation is always going to be an amount, but it's still going to be, let's put it like this, it's impossible to ever be exact, right? It's impossible to ever be exact. And as you say, the amount is the amount. So the amount is not changing here, but the Torah is saying that it is significant where it comes from. And actually, if the Torah doesn't say this, then where would it come from? It would come from, in a sense, let's say the Torah wouldn't have commented on this, right? So, but one person is coming along and saying, I want to be paid from here and I want to be paid from there, right? Or I want to pay back from there, I want to pay back from here. So I think the answer presumably would come back to what we mentioned earlier, which was hamotzi mechavero levaraya, in a sense, the person who is trying to demand something, in a sense, has to bring the burden of proof. Otherwise, the person who is making the payment, really, I would say, should be the one who gets to decide. That would be my sense. But the Torah does say it makes a difference, and therefore the Torah has a stipulation. Again, whether you follow the opinion of Rabbi Shmuel or Rabbi Kiva, there is some sort of stipulation here as to what that would be. And I think that's important to note. I think that is significant. David, what were you?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think it was essentially, it's the point that Phil was making earlier, is that we wouldn't be worried about this Meitav Haaretz if it weren't for the fact that it appears in the Torah verse. If it didn't appear in the Torah verse, we would just say, well, it doesn't matter as long as the value's the same.
Right.
The Gemara is trying to explain what that verse must mean.
I suppose so. Maybe I'm misunderstanding the question, but yeah, okay. I guess we can phrase it like that.
The whole reason for the discussion is because of what the verse says in the Torah.
But again, I think my point is that you can still conceive of a scenario where this would be a debate, even if the Torah wouldn't have said anything.
I'm not sure. In that case, I would agree with Andy. Wouldn't we just say, what does it matter?
Rabbi, I think that logically, this must be looking at a very, very specific case where it is not possible for the person who's liable to pay with monetary compensation, and so it's only possible for him to pay with land, because otherwise we wouldn't be having the debate.
I believe that's the case.
I learned elsewhere that when one studies Gemara, it's a bit back to front compared to studying law. With law, the law sets down the principles, and then what you try and do in a standard legal system is work out how to apply those principles to a set of facts. With Gemara, you reverse it. With Gemara, you don't know what the principles are, and you're now searching and seeking to find out what the principles are. And one of the methods is to come up with examples that are abstruse, offbeat, different. Because in those situations, that's when you can start trying to tease out what the principles are. And I think it's right here. What we're saying is, you don't have the money. You can only give the property. Now let's have a look at that case and see what principles that leads us to.
I think there's a lot of truth to that. I'll just add one more nuance, which is that I think the point is that we do know the principles, but the question is how to communicate them, in a sense. So as you say, you know, the way it's constructed is using, as you say, unusual cases and very, very specific points. So we sort of get to this very minor point on the edge. Again, even through this Gemara, while we're talking about a very specific case, we have encountered very significant principles here throughout this. So we have already, I think, established that we're talking about a case where a person does have land, right, as opposed to anything else. And we've also encountered the principle which seems to be critical of Hamotzi Mechavero Levaraya, i.e. that the burden of proof is upon the person who has had damage caused to them. Although maybe when we've got a little further, we'll clarify that actually this Gemara is a very interesting application of that principle, maybe a slightly unusual application of that principle, and it'd be good to discuss that in a little bit. But let's continue along. Andy had another point.
No, but we have the facts here, though. There's some question of principles and trying to see what facts could apply, or where those facts arise, principles could apply. You know, we have the facts.
Right.
So it's not a question of saying there's some principles. Where do they fit into any given case? We have the case. We know someone suffered damage. Someone is owed for that damage suffered. And all that has to be decided now is how that settlement is made. To me, it's a very straightforward case.
That's the principle we're seeking. So you can only pay with land because you don't have money. Now, how do you do it? Is it the best land and whose best land, etc.? That's what the debate is.
But you could look at it differently, which is that the guy that's got to give up the land, he doesn't have to give him the best land, the way Robbie Akiva's saying. He can just sell some land and give the money. So he wouldn't get into this problem in the first place.
Yeah, but here you're not allowed to do that. You're only allowed to use land. Of course, you could sell land, then we wouldn't be having this discussion.
No, but I think you do have a choice. You'd have to give the land. You can give money instead. In other words, if you haven't got the money, you can have to give land. But you can take your land and sell it and give them the money. Then you wouldn't be in this problem in the first place.
No, but then you wouldn't have the point is to explore it when you haven't sold the land and haven't got the money.
It's an interesting point that George raises. Let's say according to the opinion of Rabbi Akiva, where you have to pay back from your best land, let's say you choose to sell your worst land and then you have cash. Right. And then, according to what we were saying earlier, where you have the money, really, you should be required to pay back the money rather than from land. So in a sense, you can sort of get out of this altogether. I mean, presumably this whole thing is based on the fact that. I mean, I think you need to go back to really understanding, maybe I'll try and do a bit of research as to sort of what was worth more. But certainly we live nowadays in a society where probably, you know, cash is very, very valuable. Like cash is very easily transportable and, you know, and it's very, very desirable. In a sense, you'd always take cash over anything else. Perhaps the same wasn't the case, you know, that land was very, very much more significant then. I don't know. So I'm not sure exactly what the society was in that sense. My feeling is that land must have been much, much more significant.
But can I ask a question?
Sure.
Which is there no de minimis for this? Because, I mean, you know, you've inflicted something and you've inflicted damage of, you know, £500 or £1,000 or something. The costs of dealing with land and transferring land, even in those days. And also wasn't land supposed to be owned inalienably and forever? Are you not arguably depriving people of the rest of the family of something they're supposed to hang on to?
I think it sounds to me like we're talking about fields rather than homes here, if that's what you mean. We're talking about a field rather than a home.
Okay. Yeah, I understand. But even so, I mean, you know, biblically, you talk about, you know, the land being, it wasn't just their homes, was it? When people talked about the land and the inheritance of the land and the issue about who could inherit and how they might inherit and, I don't know. I mean,
that was a totally separate Gemara. Let's talk about what we call Sedei Achuza, inherited land versus non-inherited land. There is actually a difference in halacha. There's quite significant differences in halacha between different types of lands and what goes back during the Shemitah and things like, or the Yovel really. I'm not sure that's what this Gemara is talking about. I think we're just talking about regular land that is, as you say, you know, transferable in ownership and it's you know, it's beneficial to own, but in a sense you're taking it away. Let's take this back a step again. Whenever we're talking about, you know, nowadays or then, the value of a property or the value of a land is obviously going to take into account, as you said, the desirability of it, you know, and take into account the fact that the sale of it also requires effort and those sorts of things. But we're talking about, even once we've taken all that into account, there still is a bottom line figure, and that bottom line figure or that sort of assessment of how much it's worth still ends up being, it's never exactly equivalent. It's never exactly equivalent. Maybe this touches on what Andy was talking about before. There's no such thing as replacing something exactly as it was, right? It's never exactly the same. So while you can say, you know, let's say, for instance, We have this now. Someone damages my car, right? So they may, and let's say they have the best insurance in the world, and the insurance pays out on time, for example, and there's no massive pain of getting it back. Okay, and let's say that you really get back to the penny the amount that it actually costs to fix your car, right? Even after all of that, it's never exactly this. A is never exactly the same, and B, you've still had to go through all of that process and that annoyance to do that. So it's never really identical. And I think the point is here is that the Torah does lay out a principle. Again, I'm not saying the Torah is necessarily commenting on the case I just gave as to whether this is more of a sort of a moral argument. I haven't got that far. But in principle, the Torah is very clearly laying out that land that is more desirable, in a sense, is on a higher level, and will, and in certain scenarios, the person will be expected to pay back from a higher level land rather than on the lower level land. That's all. In a sense, it's a very simple point, right? So we're sort of getting maybe bogged down in the details of it, but in a sense, it's a very, very simple thing. Talking about a case where their two lands happen to match up, what the best of the person who's been damaged is equal to the worst of the person who has caused the damage, and this debate is whether you have to pay back from the one or from the other, right? From the best of the person who's been damaged, or from the best of the person who has caused the damage. That's the debate between Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva at this point. And as Erwin noted before, really what we're getting, yes, this case may appear in Beis Din, but what we're also getting from these Gemaras is an understanding of these nuances and sort of getting through the various sort of elements of it, distilling out the key elements from these specific cases.
Aren't we saying here, which would you prefer? More of poor land or less of good land? Because those are regarded as equivalent.
Right.
And who then makes the decision?
I'm not sure.
Can the recipient choose?
Yeah,
or does the payer choose?
Right. I think David's point is very interesting. I don't think that's what the Gemara said. The Gemara is not saying which do we prefer. It seems that the Gemara takes as a given that you prefer the better land. You prefer less of the better land. That's what it sounds like. You pay from the best land. Makes it sound like that's the more desirable one. That's the best one.
On an issue of practicalities, so fine. Let's say it doesn't matter whether, for the sake of this argument, whether it's the better land or the worse land. If the land is nowhere near
right.
the land that was damaged, why would the person whose land damaged want to receive land that may be miles away?
Okay, so that is that's David's point, and that is a really interesting. So I really want to find that. Okay, so that is a really interesting. Let's put that question on hold for a moment, because I think that's a really interesting question which I'd like to come back to, which is as you say, let's say we could follow the opinion of Rabbi Akiva, and really you have to really the person who's caused the damage should be paying back from their best land, but let's say their worst land is right next door to the person who has had damage caused to them, and let's say they choose, they say I would rather receive this field next door to me than receiving fantastic field in the middle of Ohio or something, right? I don't want to have a farm in Ohio. I want one right here next to me. So I think that's a really good question, which I want to save. I think it is discussed, but I don't have the sources in front of me. So let's try and come back to it. Try and come back to that one. So now. Okay, so we, as I said, we've been talking about the opinion of Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel in this very, very specific case. Now, the Gemara, and we've noted that the reasoning, that they each have sort of a Torah source for it, right? They read the verse in a slightly different way. Rabbi Shmuel reads the verse as what we call a Gezeira Shava, right? Which is linking the word Sadeh at the beginning with the word Sadeh at the end of the verse, and I don't remember what I said. That was Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Akiva does it as was sort of more the just the interpretation of the words of the verse themselves, i.e. it says his field, his vineyard, and therefore he says that must obviously we're talking, who are we talking about in that part of the verse? We're talking about the person who's paying back, and therefore that's whose field it's going to be based on. Verabi Yishmael. So now we're about 12 lines about 12 lines from the end. First word on the line, Verabi, right? Verabi Yishmael. So we're going to note the fact that Rabbi Yishmael actually really buys into both of them to an extent. Rabbi Yishmael actually sort of takes elements of both of these. Because for Rabbi Yishmael, ahani gezeira shava va'ahani krop, right? He says in some senses he uses this connection of the word sadeh, sadeh. And in another sense, he uses the literal interpretation of the verse, excuse me, Meitav Sodehu, Meitav Karo. Why? Ahani Gezeira Shava Kedar Kimna. So we've already, you know, so given the case where he uses the Gezeira Shava, i.e. where their lands match up. Va'ahani Kra, however, he uses the simple interpretation of the verse as follows. Kagun de Islay Lamazik, Idis Ziboris, right? Idis Ziboris. Let's say the person who's caused damage has very good fields and not so good fields. V'idis l'nizak, and the nizak, the person who's had damage caused to them, only has, in a sense, good fields. But v'ziboris demazik lo shavye ki'idis l'nizak. The worst fields of the mazik, of the person who's caused damage, don't really match up to the idis of the nizak, to the best of the nizak. So you have, in a sense, we'll call them 1, 2, and 3 for argument's sake. So the none of them are really the same. They're not of equivalent value. The person who's caused damage owns 1 and 3, and the person who has had the damage done to them owns 2, right? Owns this sort of in-between level. Now, which would you say, if you were to ask me at this point, what should Rabbi Yishmael say you have to pay back from? So I would say from level 2, right? Because he said in the past that you cap it at the, or he didn't say those words, but it sounded to me like you cap it at the level of what is the best that the person who has had the damage, the nizak, right? The damagee, you cap it at their level, and therefore their best fields are level 2. And therefore, I would say that you pay back from level 2. So says Rabbi Yishmael, or says the Gemara, really. V'ziburis demazik lo shavik idis denizak. Dimishalim le, this is now about 8 lines from the bottom. Dimishalim le mimeitav didei. Right, so he has to pay back from his own best land, i.e. in fact, says Rabbi Yishmael, you have to pay back from level 1, right? The person who's caused damage has to pay back from level 1 because he's, as we said, he's using both the Gezeira Shava and their reading of the verse. He's using both of these in a sense. He has his cake and eat it, to borrow a phrase, right? Not exactly, but he's basically saying that you can actually see both of these things within the verse, and they apply in slightly different cases. That's the opinion of Rabbi Yishmael. Let's just get to the other full stop in a little bit. And de lo motzi omar le ta at gabi miziboris elo gabi mimeitov. He says you cannot say to him, come along and take from my worst land, because you don't have any better land than this anyway, or you don't have land that's as good as my best land. Elo gabi miziboris mimeitov, excuse me, that's what the verse is saying. He has to give over from his best land, and that's where it has to come from. Okay, I think there's a good place to stop. It's more or less in the middle. And this is a Gemara that, as I said, is we're really just scratching the surface. There's lots of details that we can continue to try and get out of this. But this is very much the beginning of this understanding of this debate between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yishmael as to what exactly the Torah means when it says mimeitav, or sorry, the Mishnah used the phrase mimeitav, Meitav Ha'aretz. The Mishnah used the phrase Meitav Ha'aretz. The Torah used the phrase Meitav Sadehu, Meitav Karma. What exactly did that mean? In our specific case, Rabbi Yishmael said it meant the best of the Nizak, and Rabbi Akiva said it meant the best of the mazik, right? But in fact, there are going to be lots of different, subtly different cases where they may agree, may disagree, and we're going to get into, as I said, lots of different details with regards to each of these. Particularly going forward, we're going to also come back to the phrase that Rabbi Akiva mentioned earlier, which was kalvachomer lehekdesh. What about if you're paying back in other areas, right? Not in the case of damage, but in the case of area of hekdesh, where you, let's say, donate land to, or you say, I'm going to give a certain amount to the temple or whatever it may be. Those are some of the scenarios that we're going to continue to look at going forward. All right, any final questions?
Thank you very much.
No, thank you.
All right. I think that, yeah, lots of details in this Gemara. Mm.